number 013874, Campagna Against the City of Greenfield. Mr. Sutton.
May it please the court, my name is Robert Sutton. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Joyce Campana. She was employed by the City of Greenfield as the treasurer from March of 1991, and her employment was terminated on April 8, 1998. It is undisputed that, one, she was a civil servant. She had a recognized property interest in her employment at the time of her termination. Two, that under the regulations, she could only be fired for cause. Three, no hearing, no charges were ever pressed against her. There was no due process, either pre-termination or post-termination. And she was terminated on April 8, 1998. A letter was served on her by the mayor, Timothy Sider, that said, in part, in pertinent part, your employment with the City of Greenfield is terminated effective today, April 8, 1998. I believe under Loudermill, there's liability by the City of Greenfield. They assert an affirmative defense, and the judge ruled, made the finding against the plaintiff and for the defendants on their affirmative defense, which I believe is erroneous. Yeah, their affirmative defense, they can submit it to the jury, and if the jury buys it, fine. If the jury doesn't buy it, they lose. Was this a true reorganization or wasn't it? I don't know what more I can say. It was not a true reorganization, and to my knowledge, the United States Supreme Court hasn't recognized that exception to date, although the circuits have. I recognize that, but the fact of the matter is whether it's a viable affirmative defense has not been definitively decided. But a reorganization that is directed at one employee with whom they had feuded, the mayor and the personnel director for a period of years, is certainly subject to a reasonable interpretation that they were out to get her and to terminate her, and they used the mechanism of the referendum to accomplish this. So I believe that the summary judgment was improvidently granted, and it should be reversed.
Thank you, Mr. Sutton. We'll hear now from Mr. Erke.
Thank you, Mr. Honor. Good morning. I need to address a couple of statements by counsel immediately. First of all, he read part of the letter of termination that said you have been terminated effective this date. What he leaves out, which is in the record, is that letter explains that the reduction or the loss of her job is a result of an ordinance that was enacted by the City Common Council and the referendum that was handed to the voters of the City of Greenfield to determine, and then the Common Council's enactment of that ordinance with the blessing and direction of the voters. He left that out on his argument. I think that's very important. The other thing that the plaintiff here does is make the conclusory allegation that this was an improper termination. And then counsel indicated that the Supreme Court has not recognized the reorganization exception. He failed to note that this court, in the Misick case, did specifically not only recognize the reorganization, but also clarified that specifically cases where the motives of the deciding body are brought into question, that is not subject to judicial scrutiny. And specifically the cases cited in Misick by this court state that we do not look at the motives in that situation. And in fact, this court in Misick distinguished its sending the case back to the district court from those cases by again emphasizing that we are not going to look into the motives, and it relies on the cases that were cited then. What seems to be the argument that I'm seeing and hearing is that, and I believe counsel said it, that there was an improper act on the part of the City of Greenfield in terminating the plaintiff through a referendum. But what the facts in the record show without question is that the Common Council took into account factors that had been considered back as far as 1994 on reorganization, consolidation, economics, and savings. And what happens then is in August, the Common Council enacts the ordinance combining the positions and effectively eliminating the plaintiff's position. Then the plaintiff and her supporters stop that process by pushing the referendum. So for the plaintiff now to claim that the referendum was an improper tool on the part of the city employer is without any basis, because it is the voters who have to petition for a referendum. When they get that petition through, then the voters of the entire city decide on the employment action, and that's what happened here. What happens after the referendum is passed by more than 50% of the thousands of voters in the city is that the Common Council then has to enact it based on the binding referendum and binding vote. So the combination is done, and it is clear. I think what needs to be emphasized here is in the cases where the courts consistently indicate that the motives of the deciding body cannot be looked into, those are cases where an individual, and a case in fact that was sent back, the Lalvani case, was a direct individual director who made a bunch of decisions on his own. And those are the cases that the motive may be questioned. That's not a common council. It's not a legislative body in that case. Here, the council takes the referendum and really has no choice, and they proceed with it. And to attack this and to try and attack the motive, which I don't think is supported in the law, you have to ignore the fact that the plaintiff herself in 1994 advocated change. The Common Council and the Human Resources Department, separate individuals, looked at studies to combine jobs and consolidate and reduce costs. And the plaintiff herself involved in that, when the Common Council enacted the ordinance, she, as was her right, or her supporters, or the voters, took it the next step. So there is an additional safeguard here. It's not an improper tool used by the city, but the referendum is an additional safeguard here to protect and confirm the legitimacy of the decision that was being made.
How many names do you have to instigate the referendum?
I believe it was in excess of 200. I can't give you this, but it was. It is an effort that you have to do in order to get the referendum on, and that's what was done.
And couldn't you have some? Supposedly, voters had in referendum approved an ordinance which segregated the town hall. Would that, the fact that it went to the referendum, wouldn't insulate the that ordinance, would it?
I think that if there was an ordinance, if I understand the hypothetical, Judge, if an ordinance was enacted originally to segregate, then I believe on its face the ordinance would be illegal, and I think anybody that affected would have the right there. If a referendum, I guess under the hypothetical, if it was submitted to a referendum, and if you assume for the moment that the citizens would approve of that, then I think you could not necessarily question the motives of the council, which is what they're trying to do here, but you may be able to, I believe, legally look at or have scrutinized the effect of an ordinance on racial grounds, which is where I think you're going with your hypothetical, and I apologize.
Well, motive wouldn't have much to do with it, would it?
Pardon me?
In that hypothetical, I say motive wouldn't have much to do with the outcome.
I don't believe so.
So suppose it was more of an indirect, no one would pass an ordinance with that manifest intent on its face, but if in fact that were the intent, it was just accomplished more by indirection than directly, would a federal court still not be able to attack the ordinance? And
I think in a segregation, racially motivated issue, I think at least under the case law that I've looked at as it applies to reorganization and consolidation issues, if you follow that law, and I haven't looked at the racial side of it here, so I don't know, but if you follow the law that we're following here, I believe the district and the appellate courts would have to follow that. Or perhaps find something different in the case law that may exist.
That's what I'm driving at. There ought to be some limiting principle, to the principle that that legislation is somehow immune from being analyzed for underlying racial motivation.
Well, underlying racial motivation, I think I agree with you, Judge, because Title VII and all of the underlying cases there set forth all of the bases for disallowing any type of employment actions and decisions on their face. But this, those laws, those statutes, that application does not apply to a reorganization where a job position is eliminated based on nothing more than the downsizing, which the plaintiff herself admits, and that's in the record. She was downsized. She tells people she was downsized.
And suppose this were a rather small town and everybody knew, even the electorate knew when they went to a referendum. What you were doing was you were trying to get rid of the one person in city government of a particular race. That's what this was. Community-based gang up.
I guess if you have an entire community but you're following the structure that called for a popular vote on a referendum as set forth in the statutes and the existing case law.
And all you got to do is look at the legislative history and it's pretty clear what everybody was doing.
Judge, I'd have to think about that because I don't think that, with all due respect, I don't see how that plays here. But
that's what she's arguing. She's arguing that there's bad faith, and you're arguing that the bad faith ground is unavailable because under Wisconsin law, courts can't inquire into the motives of the legislative body.
I'm arguing that they cannot because MISIC indicates that state law is to dictate that. She's arguing bad faith, and I'm saying bad faith as defined in the cases that are in the briefs is only found when there is no real reorganization. It doesn't occur. That's where the bad faith and the sham language comes from.
Look at where Judge Cudahy's and Judge Ripple's questions are taking us. Are we saying that an employee who's terminated in some sort of reorganization, if it's pursuant to a legislative act, the employee, regardless of how hideous the bad faith is, how horrible the motivation is, can't challenge because the employee can only challenge whether or not the reorganization actually occurred?
I believe so. I believe so under MISIC.
How horrendous. I mean, no Jews, no blacks, no...
Well, I don't think that, and my red light's on, but I'll try and answer. I don't think that applies here. We're not dealing with that situation. What happened...
I know, but we have to think about the precedent, and we have to think about your argument.
I understand, and with all due respect, I think the precedent lies in MISIC, following the state law that is in existence, and with all due respect, there are no reasonable inferences that can come from even that kind of approach if you allow her to look at the motives based on the history of what was done. What you're asking then is, can we look at the motives of the consultants that considered and suggested it, the plaintiff in pursuing her referendum, the people that signed the petition for the referendum, the voters who approved it, the five common council members that voted for it, and the fact that the reorganization did take place. And I think that's the basis in the law that, especially with common councils and legislative, and when you've got the additional safeguard, you cannot attack the motives. Under this fact scenario with the applicable law here, and I am leaving out race because I think race is a whole other...
Well, generally speaking, across the law, I think you can't question the motives of a legislative body. I think that's a general principle, isn't it, that applies.
If there are no other questions, then I would respectfully request that this court affirm the summary judgment dismissal for the grounds as stated. Thank you.
Oof. I believe you put your finger right on the nub of the defendant's problem. This was a sham reorganization. During the campaign to pass this referendum, which, by the way, does not say, the referendum doesn't say that the Joyce Campana is to be terminated. It says that two offices are to be combined. And during the campaign, there were repeated assurances in the record from the mayor, common council members, to the public, and to everyone to get the referendum passed, that no one would lose their job. What they represented to the people was, we'll combine these two offices and we'll save that, but nobody's going to be fired. And all along, that's why they wanted the referendum passed, to get rid of Joyce Campana. And if that's a fact, seems to me that the reorganization in this fact scenario does not trump the her constitutional rights, and her doesn't allow them to take her protected property interest away from her. That's what this case is about. This is a sham reorganization just to get rid of Joyce Campana. And we should be able to present that evidence to the jury.
It's not a sham. It was, in fact, a reorganization, I guess. But it was improperly motivated, I guess, is your argument. Does that make it a sham, necessarily?
Well, I don't think...
It was a reorganization, in reality. There was a reorganization of the treasurer's office vis-a-vis the...
It was a combining of the treasurer's office and the comptroller's office. I respectfully submit that the decision should be reversed.
Thank you, Mr. Sutton. Our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement. That concludes our call for the morning, and therefore the court will stand in recess until the next scheduled session.